Hi, this is Barry Listed, Informs, the Institute for Operations Research and Management Sciences. You're listening to Science of Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. In this era of Angie's List and other rating services, patients have an opportunity to check online reviews of physicians and offer their own opinions. But do these sites provide an accurate view of individual doctors? In today's segment, we talk to Professor Ritu Agarwal of the University of Maryland Smith School of Business, where she's director of the Center for Health Information and Decision Systems. She's also editor-in-chief of the Informs Journal Information Systems Research. This June 2011, she's delivering a paper at the Informs Healthcare Conference in Montreal entitled The Information Value of Online Rating Services. Her co-authors include Jeffrey McCullough of the University of Minnesota and, joining us today from the Smith School, Assistant Professor Guodong Gao and Brad Greenwood, a PhD candidate. Folks, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thank you very much.
Let's
start with our first question. And before we look at the online rating services from internet websites, tell us a little about a related project from the federal government, from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. What is the physician quality reporting system, once known as PQRI? What does it measure, and how is it received by the medical community?
Barry, let me first editorialize for a few seconds.
Okay.
This paper comes out of a broader movement in healthcare to improve the quality of care that's delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last couple of decades, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has been trying to figure out how to improve healthcare quality and reduce its costs. So in December 2006, Congress enacted a law. It was called the Tax Relief and Healthcare Act. And CMS, that's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, at that point decided to offer physicians a 1.5% bonus if they would report voluntarily on the quality of care that they were delivering to their patients. So PQRI grew out of that initiative. Since then, it has morphed a lot. In December 2010, just 6 months ago, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services launched a website, which they called Physician Compare. And the goal of this website is to provide quality indicators on all the physicians in the country. The website is currently a shell. It has no real information in it. But the HITECH Act, which is the Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health, that was passed in 2009, now mandates that by 2013, all physicians have to provide quality information that can be publicly available on this website. So in a nutshell, we have a series of different initiatives that are underway, but they're all aiming towards the same end goal, and that is to make the quality of physicians more accessible and visible to the patients that they serve.
So we will have both a government system and entrepreneurial systems on the web.
We already have entrepreneurial systems on the web. We are in the process of putting together a government system, which is moving quite slowly. Just as a point of comparison, CMS also launched something called Hospital Compare in the early 2000s, which was focused, as you can tell, only on hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
That gave you quality information about hospitals. There hasn't been a whole lot of usage of that government website, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But PQRI is trying to do the same thing at the level of the physician.
Let's contrast PQRI with Angie's List and the others. And first of all, perhaps one of you can provide an overview of some of the online rating services that exist not only in the U.S., but also in the U.K. and other countries.
So there are a number of different rating services that are currently in place. At last count, I believe there were as many as 40 online rating services for physicians in the United States alone. Several nations have their own quality reporting systems. The United Kingdom, in 2009, through its National Health Service, or NHS, launched a quasi-official website that essentially has quality information on physicians. So in some sense, they're ahead of the game. They're ahead of what the United States is currently doing. So I think quality information on physicians is now available from whatever your favorite website might be. If you're a Zagat's consumer, if you like to visit Zagat's for restaurant recommendations, you can go to Zagat's for physician ratings as well. Gordon, did I miss any? Would you like to add some?
I think you know what you said is quite comprehensive and accurate. So the United Kingdom is the first government in this world that officially endorses the ratings by patients for physicians. So it's quite a movement, and this feature has been quite popular. If you check their website, then you will see a lot of ratings there, and so it has been heavily used by the users as well. So this is another evidence that these online ratings are in high demand.
Now, on from demand to controversy, I understand that physicians are strongly opposed to many of these systems. What is their objection, and for that matter, the American Medical Association's problem with these online ratings?
I think the big problem is the physician's concern whether these measures are a true reflection of clinical quality or not. At the end of the day, the physician is the expert, and he or she may have a very clear understanding of what specific treatment they should give you as the patient. You as the patient may not always agree with their recommendation. And if you don't and you're disgruntled, you may go online and complain about a procedure that was perfectly valid given the medical condition that you had. So in a nutshell, the American Medical Association is concerned that these online ratings will become a forum for disgruntled patients to vent their anger and frustration, and they would unfairly ruin the reputation of physicians.
Your study explores areas of bias, since what we're talking about is bias in perhaps the academic sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the first area of potential bias deals with the possibility that more unhappy patients and satisfied patients will make entries, as you were saying a moment ago.
Yeah.
And you talked a little bit about it, but perhaps you could amplify, why is that a source of concern? One would think that patients should be encouraged to express their free will, their opinions freely.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Full information disclosure is what's important. But in this particular instance, it's not full information disclosure, because if people who are happy with their patients don't bother to go online and provide a rating, then you're going to get a very skewed distribution of ratings online. And the impression that you would walk away with is that this doctor is really not a very good doctor, but that's only because the people who have bothered to go online are the ones who are unhappy. So the source of concern is really about that bias that only a certain segment, of the patients choose to go online.
Interestingly, you also worry about the opposite, that patients will stick to praising doctors when they've had good experiences. You want to elaborate about that a little bit?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that. So continuing what Rito has just talked about, basically we have two competing hypotheses here based on the patient's behavior. The first one is what Rito elaborated, what we call as the bad mouthing hypothesis, right? People go online to vent their anger. So on the other hand, it's quite possible that there is another kind of behavioral bias, which is called sound of silence. What does this mean is that, of human nature, right, we are very reluctant to talk about negative things. And then if this is the case, then what you would see online is that people keep, praising their physicians and instead of talking about a negative side.
Moving on to one other potential area of bias, the second major area of bias you flag questions whether the kind of people who comment online reflect the full spectrum of experiences that patients have with their doctors. What is this concern? Have I phrased that the way you do in your study?
Yeah, so suppose, right, you want to have a good idea about how good this physician is, right? Ideally, you want to have a representative sample for patients, right, to rate this physician. Unfortunately, in the online world, right, everything is kind of, self-selected. Right, they are motivated to read there, no one is forcing them, and normally there's no monetary incentive for them to do that as well. So in that case, then it's quite likely that the sample of people who read online is a biased sample. So this might be worrisome in the sense that the information is there for all others to read and to use, but if these opinions are biased, then this is going to hurt the social welfare.
Brad?
Just to piggyback on that a little bit, I think what our concern is that is with expectation violation. If someone goes in and has a meeting with their doctor and it goes exactly as expected, they're not incentivized to rate online. But if it's much worse or much better than they expected it to be, then they feel like they should say something. So we don't see the average meeting with your physician.
You folks constructed a study based on data from three American cities. What are the cities that you took a look at?
So we use data which is based out of three major metropolitan areas, Memphis, Kansas City, and Denver, Colorado. But the actual data extends quite a bit outside the city limits. So it covers about 220 zip codes in about a 200-mile radius around the cities themselves, which gives us a nice view of both rural and urban doctors. It also sees the data gives us something in very high-income areas and very low-income areas as well.
And what are the sources of the data about these cities that you used?
So we actually pull from multiple different sources to construct our final data set. I like to call them survey ratings, so the in-person ratings that were done, and web ratings, which are the ones that are made online. The survey ratings are pulled from Consumer Checkbook, which is a nonprofit organization that compiles ratings of local service firms and healthcare providers. And the web ratings are pulled from RateMDs.com, which is the largest single aggregator of physician ratings in America.
Now, before you go on here, you're contrasting the person who's, so to speak, self-selected, who volunteered and went online, with a group of people that were actively sought out and interviewed in an attempt to get that full spectrum of patients. And that's the basis of your comparison.
Yeah, so we're trying to mitigate the selection bias that might be there. And we also want to look at different sources to make sure that they match up. But above and beyond that, we use a lot of other sources to complete the data set. So we pull from the U.S. Census, both the decennial census and the quinquennial economic census, to look for demographic information that might change among these places. We use Google Maps and the U.S. Postal Office to try to determine how close the physicians are, whether there's physical proximity problems that might emerge. We compile peer recommendations, so do the physicians recommend each other or do they not recommend each other?
And I would assume that that's very important in your attempt to establish a standard that you're comparing against. You want to see both how a full range of patients provide ratings and also how a doctor in the same discipline would provide a rating.
So what we want to do is reduce the amount of heterogeneity in the set. We want to see on the average, how do these things matter?
And your study presents several findings. One finding is that low-quality physicians are less likely to be rated online. What did the study say on that?
So remember that just now we talked about two competing hypotheses, right? One is bad-mouthing, the other is a sound of silence. So what we find is actually the bad-mouthing hypothesis is not supported. If anything, then physicians who are rated high in the offline survey are also more likely to be rated online. So although a lot of physicians are worried about these online ratings to become a channel for unhappy patients to vent their anger, actually what we see is that about almost half of them got 5 out of 5, which is a perfect rating online. So if anything, then it means that these online ratings are about patients kind of recommending their physicians instead of criticizing their physicians.
Your second finding seems like there's less bias, I gather, that there is a strong correlation between the online ratings and offline population opinion. And is that a good sign?
Yes, that's definitely a good sign. Basically, this confirms that the information in the online rating can be used to some extent to tell, right, whether that physician is a good physician or not. So they are not purely random, but rather they have the information value.
And what exactly were the measures or the metrics that correlated?
So we correlated this online rating with the offline survey, right? As Brad just now discussed that the offline survey is more scientifically conducted, right, with a representative sample of patients. And we see a high correlation between the online rating and offline ratings. So basically, this is because, you know, both of the ratings are about patient's experience with the physician, whether the physician listens to the patients, right, whether they are punctual, whether they are helpful, whether they are knowledgeable or not, right. So you see a lot of similarities between these two ratings, and this is why they are correlated with each other.
I should also point out that both the online rating as well as the offline survey doesn't tap into what CMS is trying to measure, which is physician quality. And quality, for example, for a cardiac surgeon, you know, might be survival rate after cardiac surgery, or it might be some other metric depending on what kind of specialty you're in. But both patient experience and clinical quality measures are equally important for patients because, yes, you want to get better, but if you have a family practitioner who's going to be with you for 30 years of your existence, you also want to have a good relationship and experience with that doctor. And studies also show that patients who have poor experiences with their doctors are not compliant with their medications, or, you know, engage in other kinds of dysfunctional behaviors. So patient experience is very important.
Your third and final finding is that the online opinions do tend to go to extremes, especially when it comes to those physicians with the lowest quality of service. What exactly did you observe there?
So this is what we term as the hyperbole effect in our paper. So basically what it says is that although, you know, in the offline survey, right, you see a very nice bell-shaped distribution of ratings, in the online survey, actually, online ratings, you are more likely to see that the opinions will be skewed to one side. And here, because of the sound of silence effect, what do we see is that we see a lot of, you know, high ratings, you know, for physicians. On the other hand, and if a physician is ranked very low in the offline survey, then this physician's online rating is likely to be 1 point lower than the average, which is huge considering that it is from 1 to 5. And so if anything, then these online ratings are kind of more effective in discerning those low quality ratings than separating high quality physicians.
And are you saying that it points out the physicians who are the worst and who we should really avoid?
Exactly. I think, you know, these ratings are more useful for you to kind of, you know, discern, right, what physician that you should avoid instead of what physician you should pick. On the other hand, I do want to caution us because, or take these ratings as, you know, with a grain of salt, because there's still, you know, significant noise there.
We only have time for a few more questions. Do you have any advice for those who create and manage these online rating services?
I think the biggest piece of advice that we could give them is authentication and validation of those who are posting their experiences. You know, as has been discussed a lot in the literature, there is strategic manipulation that goes on in these online forums. So you have to be really vigilant about who's posting. For example, some people have asked the question, will doctors go online and provide ratings for themselves as a way of strategically manipulating? You know, will doctors go online and provide bad ratings for competition in their area? So some type of authentication and validation as to who the provider of the rating is an important service that these online websites should have. I think a second recommendation is that they need to make the number of ratings more prominent. So there's a lot of difference between a physician who has one or two ratings versus one who has 10, because the latter, it's much, that there's more value in the rating information that's provided online. So, you know, one could argue that perhaps they should not reveal physician ratings until there's at least a large enough sample of ratings to be able to say something meaningful to the consumer who's coming on that website. I think, those would be the two primary recommendations.
I'm sorry, were you going to say something, Gordon?
At one point is that now, I mean, you can see that the consumers are really in great need of these ratings. So this also calls for the government, right, to speed up their effort to provide this individual level performance measures for physicians.
Are you recommending any regulation of these online services?
Well, there is no regulation per se that one should put in place. They are protected by, you know, the Freedom of Speech Act. I think the only regulation that I would suggest is that the government needs to speed up the process of providing these performance measures. Consumers are going to help themselves like they've helped themselves in every other domain. And, you know, the genie's out of the box now, so the government can only help by speeding things up, what they're doing with PQRI and what CMS is trying to do.
It sounds like what you're anticipating and what's hoped for from the federal government is a system that will provide a big, wide range of reliable information.
That's correct. Not just a big, wide range of reliable information, but also one that is easily accessible. The reason why the Hospital Compare website didn't become so popular is just it's kludgy to use. So you want a tool which is as intuitive and user-friendly as any of these other websites, right, in order for patients to seek this information out. So I think sort of marketing the fact that this information is available, educating consumers on how to utilize it, what the numbers really mean, what the quality metrics mean, all those are kinds of things that the government should be focusing on.
Final question is, I'm sorry, Brad, did you want to add to that?
We don't just want it to be easy for people to consume, but we want to make sure that people put their own information up there. And one of the things that we've seen is that as more ratings go into these online repositories, the more informative they actually are when we look at the aggregated number of ratings. And it's much closer as more and more people go online and actually rate. So it's not just easy to consume, it's also easy to put your own information in.
I guess we'll sum up with the most important consumer question. You're a patient, there's something important that's happening in your life medically, you're nervous. What advice do you have for someone like that who wants to research the doctors who provide them with their medical care, both in the short run and in the longer run?
There's three key pieces of advice. You know, the first is to look for multiple sources of information and triangulate. Okay, so don't use just one website. Go to multiple websites. Go to the CMS website. See if there's information. So find out everything you can about the doctors that you want to research from every possible source. Second, I would say that, you know, look for the number of ratings and don't let just one or two ratings sway your recommendation or your decision. So you really have to look at, you know, how much information there is and then ascertain what the value of that information is based on its quantity. And I think number three is to actually read the reviews, because sometimes a physician may get rated low, but that's because the patient was upset with some staff person or the medical assistant as opposed to the physician themselves. So I think there is information value in the review itself rather than just the rating number. So it's important for consumers to look at that as well.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Ritu Agarwal, Guodong Gao, and Brad Greenwood of the Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barry.
And thank you for listening to the Science of Better podcast by Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember,